Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I am in New York City. Just arrived last evening. Happy to be back in the city. Look forward to sharing the Central Park runs this coming Sunday at 9 o'clock with all of our running and walking club members training for the New York City Marathon. We have a very insightful show today because we're going to challenge the president's executive order that everyone from 15 to 65 should get HIV tested. We'll be showing you with specific documentation that the HIV test is a fraud. And if you have any one of over 75 different medical conditions, you could possibly test positive and therefore be put on life-ending medications. So we'll deal with that. Also today, I'm going to be answering a letter from one of the people in our audience, Michael Schaefer. Michael wrote me a letter. I just read it last night. I haven't been able to watch television, read a newspaper, listen to radio in about 2.5 months. And so I started doing some catching up overnight. Michael's concern with an interview I did with Guy McPherson. Guy McPherson is a professor. He has an extremely accurate prediction rate about what's happening with our environment. And on this particular program, he did not have a positive outlook for the future. In fact, it was very fatalistic. Guy McPherson believes that we're not going to make it. Most people won't make it by 2030. We're only talking now about 16 years. So what do we do? I'll share insights of what we should know about that. Also today, if time permits, I'm going to talk about a Supreme Court ruling that could impact everyone in this audience. By a 5-4 vote, they say that drug companies are exempt from lawsuits. 80% of all drugs prescribed in the United States, there's no longer a legal liability. And that's unfortunate. Also, the Court of Appeals for Obama administration says now that journalists must testify about their sources. That goes just against the First Amendment. And last night on Bill O'Reilly, I had actually taken a break from watching him and Sean Hannity and the others who have every right to their opinion. I don't question that. But on this one, where he started in with we should never pay attention to what anyone who's a terrorist nation has to say about anything, including China in this case. Well, today, from the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, an exclusive leaked Pakistani report confirms very high civilian death toll in CIA drone strikes. That's President Obama's airstrikes. That means that we, the United States, has been systematically engaged in terrorist activity because we killed innocent people and we have violated sovereign territory to do it. I'll deal with that. As you see, we have a lot to contend with. Let's begin. First, always something positive, something that can help us, and that's how can we live a longer life? This morning when I was getting my juice in the health food store to start my day, a gentleman came over to me and he says, Gary, I've been listening to you for a long time and I have some issues. And I said, then why do you have issues? You've been listening to me a long time. He said, well, I'm one of those people in your audience that listens, but I really don't actualize very much of it. I'm stuck in my old habits, so I'm suffering, and so I gave him the advice I could. And he said, I heard about this berry that's supposed to be very powerful, something from South America. And I said, you mean which berry? There's lots of berries. Goji berry, wolf berry, acai berry. He said, I'm not sure. It comes from a tree. Well, what he's probably talking about is a berry from the rainforest of Chile and Argentina. It's delicious in its taste. Kind of resembles a dried blackberry. It looks the same, too. It's used by the Achui Indians for hundreds of years. And the Mapuche Indians were warriors, and they had great stamina and vigor. And they would carry around a pouch always with these little berries. And these are the acai berries. And what makes them powerful is that what you have is you have a score 27,000 units per 100 grams on the Borax scale. That's really high. That makes the berry the most antioxidant fruit in the world. In fact, it's higher than the acai berry, which was at 16,000 units per 100 grams. Push that into second place. In fact, the berry's impressive Borax score is reinforced by studies published in the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry and the Journal of Pharmacy and Pharmacology, which prove that they have cancer-fighting properties. But there's more. These particular berries are rich in anthocyanins, and we know that that helps tremendously the immune system. And other berries that do the same would be blueberries, blackberries, strawberries, raspberries, and grapes. They all contain anthocyanins, and that's why they're purple or red, and that gives them their anti-inflammatory property, and that guards your cell. Very good for the skin, rich in vitamin C, and we know that vitamin C is essential for the collagen matrix, which holds your skin tight, providing fewer wrinkles and less dryness. It also increases insulin production. According to a study at Rutgers University and North Carolina State University, these acai berries, M-A-Q-U-I, have a positive effect on insulin production. And that's when you consider how many Americans have bad glucose levels, that's really good. So from the man on the street who didn't know what they were, but heard there's a berry that's good. There are a lot of berries good, but that's particularly good. Not easy to find, but in time they will be. Now, women on hormone therapy, you're going to need a little extra calcium and vitamin D. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Menopause. Quote, we found that women who were on hormones had less hip fractures, and women who were on hormones and calcium and vitamin D supplements had even fewer hip fractures. This University of California, Davis, a medical professor. So here's my suggestion. If you're on hormone therapy, which I am absolutely adamantly opposed to, but millions and millions of women are on it, just to remember, you're going to increase your risk for heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, colorectal cancer, and dementia. All for what could easily be done with Vitex, Squalvine, Genistein, and getting off meat and losing weight. So you don't need the hormone therapy, but if you're on it, take an extra 400 milligrams a day of calcium to bring you up to about 800 to 1,000 milligrams and 1,000 to 1,500 to 2,000 units of vitamin D a day. That will help you, and that'll protect you. More and more Americans are becoming aware of what are called functional foods. A functional food does just what it implies. It creates a function that helps your body. According to Dr. Michael Smith, a medical doctor, one of the functional foods we should be using for muscle pain and exercise, tart cherries. Now, for those of us who've been eating tart cherries, I have always a bag of tart cherries along with some other bags of fruit that throughout the day I just take as I need them. They help ease muscle pain, but then if you drink the tart cherry concentrate, it's even more beneficial to the muscles. But let's say you're not in pain because of exercise, you're in pain because of inflammation in your joints. Then I suggest 2 tablespoons of tart cherry concentrate each morning. And that will help relieve pain because it's anti-inflammatory. It's really good. And there's a lot that we know it does beyond that. But if you're a runner, it absolutely helps lower inflammation, including interleukin-6 and C-reactive protein, as compared to a placebo group. So all runners should be using tart cherry concentrate. A new study from Boston Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School, published in the FASEB Journal, shows that DHA actually does control inflammation and shows them how it does it. And that's good, because now that they know how your inflammation is controlled, then there's no longer this kind of, well, we're not sure. Well, we should be sure. There's over 300 studies now on how the omega fatty acids, the omega-3s, help your body. In fact, there's a new one from the British Medical Journal that shows that when you increase your omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids, you can reduce your risk of breast cancer by 14%. And that was based upon 26 separate studies of over 20,000 women who had breast cancer and 800,000 women who participated in the study. Quote, in this meta-analysis, dietary intake of the omega-3 fatty acids was associated with a lower risk of breast cancer, end quote. That's impressive. So my suggestion is, make sure that you have 2,000 milligrams of the omega-3 fatty acids each day. All right? And then you shouldn't have the problems. Next up, weekly yoga class yields similar lower back pain relief as two classes. Quote, weekly yoga class yields similar lower back pain relief as twice weekly classes for low-income minority patients. This was done at Boston University Medical Center. And why is this important? Because let's say you can only take one yoga class a week. And some people go every day, but let's say you're not able to go every day. That will still make an enormous difference. It'll still help you. So make sure you get in at least one every day. In this case, they actually tested people for 12 weeks, and these were low-income adults, and they had moderate to severe lower back pain, and those that had once a week and those who had more frequently had the same benefits. So that shows that you don't have to go every day to get the good benefits. And just a few more things here. One is that curcumin, which we know is the active ingredient in turmeric, can protect premature infants' lungs, and that's important. That was published in the American Journal of Physiology, Lung Cellular and Molecular Physiology. So if you are a pregnant woman and you have curcumin or turmeric in your diet, you're helping the lungs of your developing child. So that's the latest on health and nutrition. I'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Day after day, I'm more confused. Yet I look for the light through the pouring rain. So that's a game that I hate to lose. And I'm feeling the strain. Ain't it a shame? Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I wanna get lost in your rock and roll and drift away. Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I wanna get lost in your rock and roll.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. By the way, later today at 3 o'clock, there's going to be a demonstration of those of us, and I'll go down there, give a talk, who do not believe that Homeland Security and New York City officials should be spraying anything into our subway system or anywhere else in any neighborhood. And Mitchell Cohen and many other concerned citizens in the No Spray Coalition are asking people to show up at City Hall downtown at 3 o'clock today on the steps, and there'll be a demonstration and discussion and information given as to why you should be concerned and why they're not telling you the full and complete details and the truth. And in fact, if someone's going down, I could use a write-down because my schedule is so packed today that I'm not going to have a chance to get down there unless I can get down and back. I can only stay about a half hour. Just give a call at 646-926-5422. Before we go to our commentaries and our guests, David Crowe from Canada, talking about why this new executive order, passed with no fanfare, will require all Americans between 15 and 65 to be tested for the HIV virus, which is nonsense. Just a couple of things. I have a new new special for you today, and the special is The Art of Health Cooking with David Boulay, which is normally $40, and the Joy Juicing Cookbook, which is normally, I think, $19, the new Joy Juicing book, which is a very popular bestseller, has been for about 4 months. I'm going to offer both of these as a premium today for $19.95. Now that's like almost $60 value for $19.99. Now the Joy Juicing, first off, if you haven't watched it, it is a hoot. It's brand new. Shows you all the reasons why you should juice, what you should juice, what it does for you. Shows you the best doctors that I could find in America who will explain why a living food diet, why a healthy diet can help you and how it does their patients. And all the top people are in it. Colin Campbell, Neil Barnard, some really good, great heavyweights are in there. Joel Fuhrman, John McDougall. Many others. And then I take to the streets and I get people's input, and then I go into the store and I show you how to juice the right way for detoxing, for rejuvenation, for rebuilding healthy skin and hair and bones and nails, for helping rebalance your hormone system. It's all in here. So that's a powerful documentary. And so with that, however, you're getting the new film. Brand new. It hasn't been released yet. It's not coming out until another 2 months, where I'm going to premiere it on some PBS stations. And this is called The Art of Healthy Cooking, where I've spent 2 years filming America's greatest chef, in my opinion, David Boulay. And David is a very lyrical, soft-spoken, poetic man. It reminded me of what it would be, but I could have imagined what it would have been like to have interviewed a Voltaire or a Spinoza, a Maimonides. In his field, he has that quality. When he went in the morning, and I had my camera crew, and we went down with him to the farmer's market to see how he actually has to touch the food, what he looks for. Why did he select one tomato after another, over another, or one peach over another? And there, he tells a story about every single thing. And then I watched him in his cooking classes, which are impossible to get into because they're always filled. And then one day, his wife called me and said, I thought you'd like to see the people who come to see David quietly. And I went down to his place, and there were a group, it was, I'm guessing, 12 men, and these were 12 of the greatest chefs in Japan today. And they came to David to learn from him. Now, David has a unique way of teaching, so I had to film him in his kitchen showing how he actually starts from nothing and prepares a dish. You've never seen anything like it. It's these clowns and buffoons that are on the, you know, these other cooking shows. They're an embarrassment. He is the Fred Astaire of cooking. You got to see him in action, because every single thing he does, every gesture has a reason, and he explains it. And that's what he does. And then I combined music from different periods in the 17th and 18th century, paintings, so that it's the whole documentary, The Art of Healthy Cooking, is like a classical poem to those who understand the importance of food and your health and the joy of it and the sensuality of it and the creativity of it. You've never seen anything like this. and he's never been filmed before. But he was for this. He is the best chef in America, and yet he is so humble. He is so self-effacing. He never takes credit for anything. All the more reason to watch him and listen to him. Then we spend hours sitting and talking about his life and his family and what lessons he learned from his mother. What lessons he learned from a peasant living in the woods in France. So, in effect, you're getting that for $2. So, $19.99, it's a $60 package, or about that, and it's yours today. So give a call, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. You're going to get the documentary, which is not released yet, and the book, The Joy Juicing. And it is a hoot. Plus, there's 150 regular recipes beyond all the juicing in there. And you'll see why it's been a bestseller for the last 4 months. And that money all goes to support this non-commercial station. Give a call now. Just $19.99. You're saving $40. 877-627-5065. Nice to have you with us, everyone. We're going to go to our guest in just about 7 minutes from now or so. I want to read you a letter that I received. The author of the letter is Michael Schaefer. Thank you, Michael, for sending it. Here's what it says. Dr. Knoll, your interview with Guy McPherson was thought-provoking and disturbing. As a loyal and daily listener of your NPR show and other programs, I knew things were bad, but had no idea that it was to this extent. The interview provoked me to do a little more research, explore Guy McPherson's website and some of the videos available. Usually I'm looking for solutions when I go searching like this. So were the other people asking Guy questions in one of the videos. After one of his Dr. Doom answers, he replied, as if to make light of the lack of solutions, quote, "I don't have depression, but I'm a carrier," end quote. That should have been a disclaimer played before the video because it was accurate, yet significantly understated. After being even more disturbed by what I found during my research, I'm afraid to verify some of the things he's saying because I don't want him to be right. I'm trying to force myself into denial for the sake of caring about anything beyond my own little sphere. If I believe that Guy McPherson says, by 2030, just a couple of points that struck me, at least 13 out of 14 humans will be gone, and we will be on our way to extinction and possibly a dead planet, the southern hemisphere will have most of the survivors, the complete collapse of the world's industrial economy overnight couldn't stop this impending doom, his motivation to live is to make sure at least cockroaches survive. And at the last time, except that I and the rest of the planet, for that matter, in the unlikely event that they wake up to this horrible news, have no control over changing the outcome. What else can I feel but hopeless? We can't reduce our footprint enough to make a positive difference. If this is true, I find it difficult, near impossible, to care about the nuclear power plant up the road, lack of preparedness for solar flares, income equality, buying America, decline of American manufacture, fascism growing rapidly in our government and the world, GMOs in our food, economic collapse, bankers screwing us, corporate-owned politicians, and so many other issues that used to occupy my thoughts, motivations, and actions on a daily basis to an extent like I did before I explored Guy McPherson's world. As nearly a 40-year-old father of a 4-year-old that, according to Guy, is unlikely to see 21, in spite of avoiding every toxin we possibly can, from fluoride to GMOs to mercury, sugar, and vaccines, it becomes a little more difficult to care about aging and long-term health. My only motivation is to maintain and improve my health so that I can be an asset instead of a burden to my daughter in a world that might change so fast that I increase her odds of survival by a fraction of a percent instead of decreasing them many-fold. But I can accept that there is even a chance for her, let alone myself. Apparently, Guy also believes that the world money and power know all this, and that that's why they have no reason to act on climate change. Their only goals are to increase their and their family's odds of survival at any expense, and to do that, they need to shuffle and the industrial economy is humming along. The more people that are aware of this inevitable apocalypse means more competition for survival. Accepting this information as reality leaves me two options as far as I can see. I can come to terms with my and my offspring's likely death in the next 20 years and adopt a sort of hedonistic eat, drink, and be merry lifestyle, try to give her as much bliss as possible until the end, maybe play the lottery every day and hope that I win a billion can get on whatever spaceship or whatever hole the elites might be building. The more likely option for an optimist, for lack of a better word right now, like myself, would be trying to figure out how to prepare at and prepare to fail at ending her life in a world that might be very tough to live in. Where do we go? What do I teach her? Both of these options leave me caring a bit less about the issues I'm all over with you every day. Until recently, I hoped you'd do something on one of your shows about homeschooling curriculum for non-theists. Now this has moved way down my list of concerns, as have many things you've talked about. I keep listening and hoping that you'll come back to Guy McPherson and thoroughly cover the topic, maybe throw a grain of hope in the discussion. Normally, I share the information I learn on your show. I share the problems and the solutions you bring. However, even if you had a solution for this one, the majority of people I share with wouldn't be able to accept this news. They'd have to call me crazy or risk their own sanity. I always believe you when you said your show was about solutions. If that's still true, I think you need to return to this topic for the sake of your loyal listeners. I never felt like ignorance was the better option until I met Guy McPherson. Now I'm not so sure. Sincerely, Michael Schaefer. All right, Michael, in order to understand your concerns and what we make of not just Guy McPherson, but of a lot of other people that I've had on the program over the last 4 or 5 years, and starting about 5 years ago when I did a 2-hour special on the 12 tipping points, and I suggest you go back and listen to that on the internet. I've done over 100 programs on this topic, and with each one, I point out the problem and try to offer solutions. And so, in my opinion, Guy McPherson is just one individual who has come to an analysis, but there are many others. Lovelock has done so, and Rupert Sheldrake has done so. All of these people are unique in that they're considered eccentric because they don't fit in with the existing educational or academic paradigms. They're unique thinkers. Sometimes they're absolutely right on, spot on, accurate. Other times, they're not. So we begin by taking a look at what's going on today, as we speak. Well, let's just look around. If all you have to do, according to Echo Shock, is just take a look. We have Fukushima, the reactor. It's worse than what we were told. Now imagine that you're not living here, you're living in Japan, where that is continuing to come out every day, 24/7, radiation, including plutonium, and poison the air, and the soil, and the water. At what point will you keep denying its significance and raising the threshold of tolerance until people begin to get sick, hospitalize, or die? But the Japanese officials are completely without remorse when it comes to lying to their own people. They're also misogynist, highly racist, and so they'll do anything to stay in power. The trouble is the people are docile. There's passivity everywhere. People want to go back to their homes. They don't want to be told they can't return. So for them, there's no happy outcome. However, there's a high probability that in Japan, over the next 2 to 3 years, that a treaty will be signed between China and Japan, allowing Japanese industries and then population groups to move to the 17 phantom cities. That would take about 65% of the entire Japanese population, if it ever came to that, that could live there and live without the constant threat of radiation. So a terrible disaster, but there are solutions. But the solutions have to be political as well as ideological. But there is something of a ray of hope there. Then you look around at the heat, and the heat is getting worse everywhere. Today, they're in the historic heats. We're breaking records every single day. Record heats in California, and giant fires. Giant fires are clear across the United States today. record-smashing heat in Death Valley, also reaching the hottest temperature ever recorded on Earth and in Death Valley. Nevada, Oklahoma, Arizona, and New Mexico are in meltdown mode with no relief for months to come, and it's going to get worse. Also, the eastern half of North America is going through extreme precipitation, excessive rain, flooding, and then going back into drought. All that flooding rain does not fill our aquifers, nor does it help ease the conditions of drought. These are extreme weather incidents. You have, for example, temperatures going to 100 degrees Fahrenheit and well above in a lot of places. Humidity is staying high. And all the major cities of the East, from the Carolinas up through Ohio, Pennsylvania, Canadian provinces of Ontario and Quebec, where we have a lot of people listening right now, are stuck because they're in these domes of heat. Urban smog comes behind that, and that hurts the lungs. Children are dying. And a lot of elderly people are also sick or dying because of this. And they'll list the incidents as heart attack, but then again, you have to look at the actual causes, and it's due to this. So we have to be aware that we're going through a rough time, and it's only going to get worse. But it's also true in England. In Britain, it's so hot in the United Kingdom right now that 760 deaths are attributed to the heat wave already. And that's just the beginning of it. And also, people inexperienced with lakes and rivers are so desperate to cool off, they dive in, and that's not good. You're picking up an awful lot of things you don't want of concentrated contaminants and parasites. It's also happening in Russia again. They had their giant heat wave in 2010. It's happening again. It's also hot across Scandinavia, Siberia. It's heating up. And that means the permafrost is melting. That means methane gases is going into the air, and that's contributing to the excess heat. So when we look at all the different places on the continent, we're looking at increasing weather changes. So this is called, according to James Howard Kunstler in the book The Long Emergency, we're now in the long emergency, the climate change emergency. It's really irrelevant what the President of the United States or Congress or the media think, because they have already decided to do nothing about it. You won't see a single, solitary, meaningful thing done, and it can't be. So on one hand, you can be empathetic with the President and all of the experts and the advisors and the journalists that surround him, because they have taken too much money from all of the major sponsors of pollution. Big Agra, big oil, the big gas, nuclear, they all pollute. And they all contribute at different stages of either in pre-production or production of the problem. So they can't go back and say, look, you know, for the public's good, for the earth's good, we have to rescind what we did and put some, you know, teeth into these reforms. That'll never happen. They'll say they're concerned and they're going to form a new committee, as if we need another committee. But the people on the committee already be hand-selected to make sure that they give the answer that's the official answer. But the reality is, things have tipped. Quote, the world is currently on course to exploit all of its remaining fossil fuel resources, a prospect that would produce a different, practically uninhabitable planet by triggering a low-end runaway greenhouse effect. End quote. That's Professor James Hansen, the former head of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies and the world's best-known climate scientist. So let me just repeat that so you're clear. This is going to produce a practically uninhabitable planet. So that's where we're at, and that's not going to change. And you have to be realistic in the body politic to understand why none of this is going to change. Now, of course, you have all the apologists on the left who can't bend over far enough to keep apologizing for Obama. And even this morning on one of the popular radio shows on the left, they had some person talking about, well, you know, if only he had had more support. This man had all the support he needed. It just wasn't from who you thought. He had the support of big oil, nuclear, coal, gas, Agra, and Wall Street. That's who gave him support. That's who he's supporting. So just understand, global heat is serious, and it's going to get worse and worse. Now, this is the next thing. This comes from Common Dreams from today. Quote, from the UN, climate report will, quote, scare the wits out of everybody, end quote. A leaked portion is downplayed as not representative of the complete IPCC findings. And that's what they're saying about this. It's going to scare everyone. Well, that's not good. So mark my words, before that comes out, they'll try to change it so it won't scare everyone because they don't have answers. So you have to look at the reality of what's coming up. And then the big thing coming up is our food crisis. From Gary Paul Nahum from the New York Times. Quote, Tucson, Arizona. This summer, the tiny town of Furnace Creek, California, may once again grace the nation's front pages. Situated in Death Valley, it last made news in 1913 when it set the record for the world's hottest recorded temperature of 134 degrees. With the heat wave currently blanketing the western states, and given that the mercury there has already reached 130 degrees, the news media is awash in speculation that Furnace Creek could soon break its own record. Such speculation, though, misses the real concern posed by the heat wave, which covers an area larger than New England. The problem isn't spiking temperatures, but a new reality in which long stretches of triple-digit, meaning 100-degree-plus days, are common, threatening not only the lives of millions of people who live there, but also a cornerstone of the American food supply. People living outside the region seldom recognize its immense contribution to American agriculture. Roughly 40% of the net farm income for the country normally comes from the 17 western states. Cattle and sheep production make up a significant part of that, as do salad greens, dry beans, onions, melons, hops, barley, wheat, and citrus fruit. The current heat wave will undeniably diminish both the quality and quantity of these foods. The most vulnerable crops are those that are already in flower and fruit when temperatures surge, from apricots to barley, to wheat to zucchini. Idaho farmers have documented how their potato yields have been knocked back because their heat-stressed plants are not developing their normal number of tubers. Across much of the region, temperatures on the surface of food and forage crops hit 105 degrees, at least 10 degrees higher than the threshold for most temperate zone crops. What's more, when food and forage crops, as well as livestock, have had to endure temperatures 20 degrees higher than the long-term average, they require far more water than usual. The western drought, which has persisted for the last few years, has already diminished both surface water and groundwater supplies and increased energy costs because all the water that has been pumped into elsewhere. If these costs are passed on to consumers, we can again expect food prices, especially for beef and lamb, to rise, just as they did last year, the hottest year in American history. So extensive with last year's drought that 1,500 counties, about half of all the counties in the United States, were declared national drought disaster areas. 90% of those were hit by heat waves as well. The answer so far has been to help affected farmers with payouts from crop insurance plans. Okay, well, that doesn't do a lot of good, does it? Now, I could go on and give you more, but I do that every day. Every single day, I'm giving you an idea of what's happening. These are all pieces of a puzzle. Now, what I would do if I were you is first I would pull back and realize that there's a great deal you can do. I just finished being on the road. I'm now back, and I'll be premiering a couple of new films when I'm back and doing a couple of lectures, and then I go back out again. But my last 2 weeks, I was helping a group of our listeners from KPFK, our sister station in Los Angeles, do a health retreat. Every single evening, I showed the problems and the solutions for sustainability. And all this was all in a sustainable environment. They had classes in how do you get off the grid? Because what good does it do you to listen to this program and to buy, let's say, some organic vegetables at your local farmer's market, and then you're banking or your mortgage to Bank America or Wells Fargo or Citi. You're still connected. What good does it do if you continue to watch their television or shop in their stores or buy their insurances or buy their products made in Bangladesh? So first and foremost, the most important solution is get off their grid. Now, where do you go? Well, I'm suggesting that people begin the process in a orderly and a systematic way of educating themselves as to what they need to prepare for the next stage of their life, and do so with optimism, because there are places that you can buy land or at least be a part of some shared or a common group living, you know, like a collective, where you have quality water, quality soil, quality environment that is sustainable. Understand something. Not everyone is going to be equally adversely affected. It's where you're at, and it's what you're doing, and it's how you're able to survive there. I showed people how to use greenhouses, hydroponics, aquaponics, how to make them yourself. Right now I'm making one in my home where it'll be finished in about 2 weeks. I just have to get back there and finish it and photograph each stage. For about $8,000, you could create a hydroponic house that you could earn somewhere in the neighborhood of about $35,000 a year. Well, I'll spend $8,000 or $10,000 if I can earn triple that back in a sustainable way. So you've got to learn how to grow your food, but in temperature-controlled environments, so you're not susceptible to how hot it is or how dry it is. And you also have to be around other people sharing experiences and sharing your strengths with those people. So if you're going to be at the side of a volcano, if you're living where an earthquake could hit you, a volcano could hit you, a tsunami could hit you, tornadoes could hit you, then you're living in the wrong place. But the trouble is we are afraid to move. So we tie ourselves into our environment and then justify that somehow the government's going to protect us or help us. It won't. The next big hurricane that hits New York won't be a one Category 1 Sandy. It could be a 3 or 4 or 5. Then suddenly people wake up. If that's what it takes to get their attention, sooner or later, you'll get that attention. And I'm suggesting, why wait? Why not prepare? You could do. I gave 43 things people could do to be sustainable, learn an income, be self-sufficient, and have quality of life. Growing mushrooms, for example, getting fruit from other, what's called drop fruit, that other people can't sell because it's not cosmetically perfect, washing it and making jams, ciders, dry that fruit, keg it. It stays for years. You can sell it at farmers markets and other places. So you could have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years to build up your cooperative, to build up your homestead, your personal homestead, even rent rooms to people who don't want to be in the city, just like the Amish farmers do. The Amish farmers are book solid over in Lancaster County because people want to get out of the city and spend a week or two in a more wholesome, natural environment. They're not there to care about the Amish's religious beliefs. That's irrelevant. They're there to see a quality of life that's close to nature that honors that balance. That de-stresses people. You could do the same. You could have your own homestead, and as long as you go down to the aquifer, so you're on your own water, as long as you have solar, back it up by propane, and if you have natural gas, not gas hydrofracking, being a natural plume, then you can survive. But you can't be in Southern California and survive. You can't be in Nevada, most of New Mexico, half of Texas, Western Texas, Southern Texas. They're going to get creamed. You have to be in the right place, and that means you have to do your homework. Now, you should know already that we spent a year, looking at every place that was safe and healthy and sustainable to live in the United States and around the world. We made maps, and we gave all the information you would need, the best places. You didn't mention that. You didn't mention the what to do when an emergency strike, the three-hour CD that we did. So on the one hand, I've produced over 1,000 hours, documents, articles, studies to help you, and you're sitting there saying, what do I do? Well, if you've been listening every day and all you can do is act pathetic and wring your hands, then I suggest that the issue is not global warming. The issue is not one guy McPherson and his particular opinion. He may be right, he may be wrong, but it's irrelevant if he's right or wrong to me. I'm going to go ahead and plan a quality of life for myself or those other people who want to plan a quality of life for themselves where it's going to be better than even the life I have now. There are things about New York City I love. Last night, 1 o'clock in the morning, I took a break and walked down to Lincoln Center just to be able to pick up that energy and walk back uptown. But when it comes to sustainability, New York is not sustainable. Pittsburgh is not sustainable. Miami's not sustainable. You know, Charlotte's not sustainable. There's a lot of places not going to be sustainable. But today, yeah, today, if you can afford it, it's sustainable. Today. But also think about the places today that are not sustainable. So what I would suggest you do is just get, surrender fear and appreciate the moment you have. I would hate to think that if nothing happened in the next 15 years, that would be that cataclysmic that you would have squandered a lot of your life living in dread and fear. Never allow fear to capture the imagination and the essence of a single moment of your life. I don't do anything out of fear. I do it out of the joy of celebrating the options I can create, and that's my solution. So no, we're not all sitting around wringing our hands. We're living meaningful lives with joy, happiness, humor, and we're learning, and we're growing. Hope that answers your question. I'm Gary Nall. Now to our guests who are standing by. My first guest comes from Calgary. David Crow, he is the president of the Alberta Reappraising AIDS and Rethinking AIDS, whose website he hosts, the RethinkingAIDS.com. It's a science and news resource on all international research and commentary and challenges the current HIV/AIDS model. He's also former president treasurer of the Green Party in Alberta, Canada. And he is joined by Professor Andy Maniotis. And he is the science and biomedical consultant for Cures Within Reach. And he has extensive scientific, academic, and research background. Over the years, he has held research associate positions at University of California, Berkeley, where he received his doctorate, Harvard University, and Washington University School of Medicine. And he has been the leading scientist with the Rethinking AIDS community. And his website is andrewmaniotis.wordpress.com. Nice to have you both with us today.
Thanks for having me back on the show, Gary.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. It's good to hear you again.
Good. David, I'm going to start with you. President Obama very quietly signed an executive order, the HIV Care Continuum Initiative, and that is mandating national HIV testing for all individuals between 15 and 65 years of age. Why are you opposed to this?
Well, it doesn't mandate HIV testing, but all it does is it creates a new bureaucracy. They created a bureaucracy in 2010 with their comprehensive national HIV/AIDS strategy. And what this does is creates a new bureaucracy and a new intergovernmental working group, which with members from Human and Health Services, Department of Justice, Department of Labor, Office of Management and Budget, and the idea is very bureaucratic, that if they write enough reports, if they have enough meetings, if they review enough research, that they will find ways to get more people, more Americans, to be HIV tested, that they will find more to be HIV positive, and that they will immediately put them on drugs. Because in 2012, they changed the U.S. guidelines to basically say, ignore the CD4 count. If somebody's positive, they should be on drugs right away. And they've basically laundered scientific research, which is pharmaceutically corrupted, into supporting that point that everybody's better on antiretroviral drugs.
All right, good. Now, what would that mean, Andrew, from your perspective, if you tested positive but you didn't actually have the HIV virus and you were put in antiretroviral drugs? What would happen? What would be the likely outcome within 5 years?
Well, you're kind of faint, your voice, Gary. If you could speak louder, I can't hear you too well, but I'll answer your question. I did understand it. What that means is that essentially a person is then exposed to what amounts to equivalent of cancer chemotherapy for life and a repression of bone marrow and the immune system. In other words, they're treated with drugs that are designed to erase a molecular signature or signal that has really nothing to do with a virus, but it has a lot to do with your own immune system. And the outcome is approximately 50% of the people will experience immediate morbidity, and the other 50% will experience it within about 2 or 3 years. They'll start to lose muscle mass. They'll start to gain fat deposits due to lipodystrophy. They will also be, if they're children or infants, like a current one we're looking at, they will have to have transfusions because their bone marrow is not functioning properly. That's sort of the expectation. The real problem with it, though, is it seems like, because it is an executive order, and I agree with everything that David said in terms of the bureaucracy, is that it's as much of a ruse as, 9/11, for example. We know this to be the case, and it's coming from the left. You were speaking of the left earlier, Gary, because it's one of their corner pieces and of the Harvard School of AIDS initiative under Maurice Templesman, who created it and then invaded Africa to treat silicosis of the miners there, as it were, pneumocystis carinii pneumonia, an AIDS-defining illness, so that they could land grab. But it's coming right now at a very interesting time with the NSA and the IRS debacles that are being exposed, and it's no different because if you look at their defense for their bureaucracies, they'll say, well, we prevented 50 terrorist attacks. You'll hear these congressional reports and things. For 9/11. That's why we need to take away everybody's sovereignty and everybody's human rights, everybody's political rights in this country, is because we're going to prevent something from happening, even though AIDS was pronounced over in 2008 by the head of the World Health Organization. They're going to continue this process of testing everybody, and this is not new. I mean, the public health agencies have been doing it for years anyway, and now every emergency room visit they'll test you for HIV. And the problem with that is that in a low-risk population, if you don't have any bad behaviors or other medically defining conditions that will trigger the test, you will invariably, every false positive is a false positive. In a low risk population, and they make
every
these
positive,
algorithms.
Every positive is a false positive.
So that's the other issue. By definition, we know that. The real problem is the culprit has not been identified yet. I mean, in terms of AIDS, AIDS is a series of 58 diseases that. For which no virus has ever been shown to exist in the blood of a human being. And we've been trying to do it with new and the best tests on Earth using electron microscopes, and we haven't seen a single viral particle yet.
Yeah,
they should come to us.
I'm not convinced this will change anything. I mean, one of the things the executive order says was that in 2010, they released their first comprehensive national HIV/AIDS strategy, and it says, quote, they set quantitative goals for reducing new HIV infections, improving health outcomes for people living with HIV, and reducing HIV-related health disparities. Yet in this executive order, they don't describe whether they achieved those quantitative goals or whether they did. And I'm sure that in 2 or 3 years, they'll create some new initiative with a new name, with a new bureaucracy, with a bunch of new meetings with other parts of the bureaucracy, and they'll throw a few million dollars at it. But in reality, nothing will change except that the pressure to get HIV tested will be greater, and the pressure to take drugs right away and not wait until CD4 counts have changed will be greater. Because the basic problem is that America is running out of willing victims, people who will participate in the AIDS establishment by swallowing drugs. And because AIDS is actually, in America, is a socialized medical experiment, because very few people can afford to pay for their own drugs, so there has to be government programs to pay for them. The only way the pharmaceutical companies can make money is to have victims to swallow the drugs. If people refuse to be tested and refuse to swallow the drugs, AIDS would wither and die. I mean, I think it essentially is doing that, because they just can't keep finding people who are willing to take cancer chemotherapy every day for the rest of their life out of the fear that they will die.
Last question for you, David. Is there any proof anywhere, credible proof that's independently verifiable, that the HIV antibody test that they would be using is accurate?
Well, no. They only only way to validate an HIV antibody test would be to take pure HIV virus and inject it into an animal, or I guess, you know, you obviously couldn't do it into a human for ethical reasons, but you'd have to inject it into an animal and prove the antibodies only occur after that injection. That's still not absolute proof because it doesn't eliminate all the possibilities of cross-reaction. But given that nobody's ever purified HIV, that experiment is undone because it's currently impossible. But how do you...
Yes, David. David, are you there?
Cessation of the latest of the 224 HIV vaccine trials because it increased the rate of HIV in the vaccinated. So you're not injecting live virus, but components of HIV, they do not protect. So it violates the central tenet of immunology, and that is the so-called antibody reaction. The experiment's been done on humans, not animals, 224 different times at a price tag of $500 million a year. And it has never evoked seroimmunity, mucosal immunity, and they often abruptly stop these vaccine trials precisely because they cause morbidity in the vaccinated that have the experimental concoction that they call HIV in it. So the experiment has been done 224 human times since the beginning of the search for an HIV vaccine.
Final thought from you, David. You cut out there. We're having trouble with his line.
With Dr. Maniotis, but the problem is that those antibodies or those proteins that they're injecting into people to claim that they're vaccinating people did not come from pure HIV because nobody's purified HIV. So those proteins would come from people who had AIDS, came from cell cultures, came from lots of places, but they did not come from pure HIV. And so any experiment that is done with materials that don't have a known provenance are totally meaningless. The fact that you can generate certain antibodies by injecting people with certain proteins means nothing if you don't know where the proteins came from originally.
But that would also mean that the entire paradigm that the HIV AIDS establishment has been feeding off of to about $1 trillion is based upon an unproven principle. They cannot show you the isolated HIV virus. Is that
not
correct?
Absolutely correct.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much. One more
virus and a living human being, and we've tried. We keep on challenging the AIDS establishment to do the same experiment that we do, using the only microscope in the world that can see it, and that's an electron microscope. And so far, we test people with very high so-called viral loads and they are not on antiretrovirals, and we have found not one virus, not zero. In other words, you'd expect at least with a 9 million viral load to see a couple viruses floating around their bloodstream in which they make the claim of a viral load test. But so far, no virus has been seen. It's like the so-called terrorists. I relate this back to the executive order because it's on that level of a ruse on the American people in the world to now go looking in everybody and raising the level of fear and whipping up fear and stigma in those that will test positive, ruin families. I had a man call me from New York the other day. He's crying. He's asking us to test his blood with the microscope to see if there's anything because his wife has thrown him out of the house, you know, and he's lost his family, and it goes on and on and on.
Okay. We thank you for your insights, David Crowe and Dr. Andrew Maniotis. And he is a former instructor at University of Illinois Medical School, Harvard University, and Washington University School of Medicine. And they have 3,000 scientists, Nobel Prize winners, physicians, professor emeritus, activists, journalists who say we got it all wrong. And I believe they're 100% right. I'm Gary Nolan. I want to thank you all for listening. We have, all right, we don't have Eutrice Lee there. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Wow, powerful information here. As you know, I've been getting just so many wonderful testimonial responses from the people who were at your recent retreat. We're talking everyone from professionals to blue-collar workers, just everyone from your PRN audience and your KPFK audience and all the other Pacifica audiences that just had a blast. I have a guy who's a welder in Houston, Texas, who tells me that while everybody else has ear plugged in, he's got PRN plugged into his ears all day, and he just feels like he's head and shoulders above everybody else in terms of knowledge of what's really going on. So it's just been sensational, the positive responses to the last retreat. So I'm sure people are going to be eager to come to your next one.
Starting tomorrow, we're going to play you some of the people giving their exiting comments. So thank you, Luann. And we're going to say goodbye. Look forward to seeing more of everyone tomorrow. 3 o'clock today in front of City Hall, a demonstration against the gassing of our subways to test a biological agent that we don't need. See you there.